My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast, rolling along with Seth Payne. I don't feel like, Seth, I have an aggregated or an average age for when people stop fighting.
Yeah. I had asked the question early on, and I can't even remember why I asked the question, but we were kind of wondering, what's the average age at which, if you've ever been in a fist fight in your life, what's the average age of your last fist fight that you ever had? Because I felt like it's probably right around when testosterone levels peak at the age of 19. And judgment is still kind of sketchy at that age, as we men know. If you haven't admitted it to yourself, it's because you're 19. So it's dicey. It's dicey at the age of 19. But we've gotten quite a few people that it seems like early to mid-20s seems to be as common as 19 or 20. And we've got a few very interesting people that I want to have a beer with someday, maybe, who his last fist fight was like at the age of 45 or 49 or so. We haven't gotten anybody in the 50s yet. Right? That's very rare. The 50-year-old fist fight, very, very rare.
Yeah, we just got we've got the 50 and 60-year-old that's like, hey, I got into a fight in my 40s, but I feel like 40 is about it. 45 was the highest age that we saw. But I thought about this too. Like for me, Seth, I can admit this. I peaked a little early, like physically. You can look at me, who you're looking at right now. I'm 35 years old. I've been the exact same size since I was 14 years old, since the ninth grade.
Oh, so you were a beast when you were 14. Okay. Yeah.
I might not be an impressive 35-year-old, but but in the ninth grade, man, you thought I was a prodigy. Like, I might be the future.
I always feel bad for kids like you, though, because, you see it a lot where, man, like when they're 14, they're just dominating everything in all sports.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden for them, as opposed to most kids where it's like, okay, by the time you're a junior and senior in high school, you're really coming into your own. It feels like for those kids, and I don't know if this was your experience or not, it's almost like they have to come to grips with reality that they're not as awesome as they thought they were.
Yeah. No, that happened toward the end of high school when I all of a sudden, being 6 foot wasn't, being 6 feet tall as a senior is not as impressive as being 6 feet tall as a freshman.
Right.
So that happened, but it worked out for me though, Seth, because my interest changed. Like around the time where I was no longer physically dominant also coincided with the time where I was no longer interested in being physically dominant.
Oh yeah.
Like my interest had also changed as well. So it worked
protected
out.
You from physical violence, like when you're younger and might be wanting to fight or whatever. But then by the time you were no longer interested in such things, you were it wasn't as much of an issue. It's easier to walk away from things and whatnot.
From the 713, 43, drunk and got my ass kicked.
Dude, there's a movie that I grudgingly watched. I didn't think I was going to like it for some reason. Ford versus Ferrari.
Oh, yeah.
And I ended up really enjoying it. It was with Matt Damon and Christian Bale, about when Ford was like trying to take on Ferrari in the racing world. But there's a scene... There's a scene there where Matt Damon and Christian Bale, I don't know how old they're supposed to be in the movie, but probably in their 40s, and it's hilarious because they get into a fight and basically just tap out. They both tap out because they're just like, they're so tired. You forget how physically exhausted a physical altercation is. It's not like you go into a fight kind of, you know, just relaxed but focused or anything. Usually you're in like really the worst emotional state ever for a fight, which is angry, and that makes you tired 8 times faster, and then fighting itself is pretty physically grueling. Yeah, I could totally see if I were to get in a fight. And how old was that guy? 43?
Yeah, 43. Yeah, drinking, I could
totally see myself getting like in a fight with my brother, and after about 90 seconds both of us being like, all right, you're still a dad.
We've got a 58-year-old who says he's been showing restraint for about 30 years. He says, I'm 58. This is from the 713. I'm 58 years old and struggle not to beat someone's ass on a weekly basis. Probably haven't fought since I was 20, give or take a year.
That's good that you're restraining yourself. I feel like, man, if you're 58 and you still are getting that angry or upset about it, I just feel like you might need to take some, just like watch some YouTube stuff on anger management or something. Like it should get easier for you. You might just still get angry about stuff, but not to the point where you feel like you want to fight somebody. You might just be too much man to handle for yourself. You gotta figure out a way to tamp that down a little bit for your own mental health.
The 346 says, my last scrap was January. I am 59 years young.
Shut up. Who are you fighting at 59?
Come on, man.
Oh, come on.
How are
All right,
you
we
not,
need more details on that.
How are you not solving your issues with words, your problems with words at that point, at 59?
I don't know, but I want to meet him. I should have a big old party with everybody who said that they've had fights in their 40s and
50s. Fight club.
We'll have it in a small, cramped room. It'll be too hot, and I'll feed them whiskey. That'll be a whole new niche on the internet.
I'll film it.
Old man bar fights, yeah.
The 832 brings up a good point. If you play pickup basketball, fighting can last well into your mid-30s.
That's a good point, yeah. Yeah. Heightened tension and everything, competitive situation. It's never accepted, kids. Never accepted. But I guess they may be somewhat more accepted or expected in those situations because the environment matters, you know. You're unlikely to get in a fight outside a church. Much more likely to get in a fight and in places where fights tend to happen. I'll fight you if you take a different interpretation of predestination than I do, though, you son of a bitch. Yeah.
Hey, look. Y'all clearly don't want to get on the wrong side of Seth. I've thought about this, honestly, Seth. Like, if for some reason, you know what I think about that day? I'll never forget this, actually. The day that DeAndre Hopkins got traded. And you remember this, Seth, because you came up here and you talked on the air.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you were angry that day. I was still relatively new to the station. I knew you, though. I knew you before I worked here. But I was relatively new to the station and relatively new to working with y'all.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember you being or having at that point seen you that angry before.
Oh, yeah.
And I can remember thinking like, yo, he's not mad at us. But but like if he decides that this ish is over, it's over. Like,
yeah,
I want to be on his side. I'm on whatever side you're on, basically.
Sometimes I forget how big and angry I can be.
You were big and angry that day.
Yeah, and I used to be like, by the time you got here, I'd calmed down somewhat from when I used to flip out about stuff all the time.
But then Bill O'Brien had to damn trade DeAndre Hopkins for a ham sandwich.
Yeah, no, don't worry. I wouldn't have punched you in anger over that trade or anything. I've always been good at staying just below the edge. I feel like I was very, back when I had like serious, genuine anger issues, I was always, though, because it was it was all so familiar to me that I could actually, it wasn't that I had anger management, because I could control it pretty well. I've always been able to come down from it very quickly, because I learned how to tap into it for football. I wasn't that good of a football player until I kind of like had a water boy moment once in high school, where I just something, I can't remember what triggered it, but I kind of figured out and learned how to tap into the psychotic side, and it just changed everything. So I was always kind of really good at bringing it up when I wanted to, but then tamping it down. But I didn't realize how much or how destructive it is when you overuse it, you know, or when you just, when you don't realize, like, oh, I'm not actually winning this argument. I'm just shouting louder and more aggressively than somebody else. Yeah, like it's so once I made that realization, I was able to pull it back just almost completely. But yeah, it's never been to the point where it got me in risk of actually like beating somebody up for no good reason. Okay, this is the scariest instance I was ever in something like that. Do you remember Orlando Brown Sr., Big Zeus?
Of course.
The Ravens and then Browns offensive lineman and then back to the Ravens again.
Yep.
So his nickname was...
His son, who Ross Blacklock swung on, I think, a couple of years back. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Big Zeus was called Big Zeus for a reason. He was a freakishly large and very angry football player. And, people did not mess around with Big Zeus. So... For the kids, you might have seen something about this, but this is kind of a big incident back in the day and in the early 2000s. It was us. It was late 90s, because I think I was on the Jaguars at the time. We were playing in Cleveland. Big Zeus, so it was like in the expansion year or the second year that the Browns were back in Cleveland. Jeff Triplett, the official, threw a penalty flag on a play, and it hit Big Zeus in the eye. Like, went right through the face mask, hit him in the eye. Ultimately, it would, like, temporarily blind him, and he got a huge settlement from the NFL because of it. But in the moment, we were not thinking about lawsuits. I was standing there, and I saw Big Zeus shove Jeff Triplett. And look, I know that this isn't literally how it happened, but this is the way it looked. It looked like Jeff Triplett went like 10 feet in the air. In my mind, like watching Zeus hit Jeff Triplett, it looked like he cleared like 10, 15 feet backwards with like full kapow Batman music and everything. And all I was thinking was, how the hell are they going to restrain this dude? And it was kind of like, I had to consciously be like, don't step backwards. Don't step backwards. Don't look like a punk. Because I wasn't that close to him, but I was close enough that I was kind of like, I don't know what they're going to do to this guy. I don't know how they're, and then luckily he was, Big Zeus wasn't he could control himself, but it was scary, man. That was a big, angry dude. If I saw that out in public, it's probably like the people in that bar when Richie Incognito was marching around the bar with his shirt off. You know, you got this 335-pound psychotic drunk dude tearing his shirt off and yelling. I bet people in that bar were scared as hell.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Man.
It was I had to consciously tell myself, like, don't be a punk. Don't be a punk. Don't be a punk. If he decides to come after me, don't be a punk.
You know a fight was real or an ass whipping was real when you think about it. And it's like, I remember sound effects. Because you went kapow.
Yeah.
Like if you remember or can insert sound effects into an ass whooping, you know that one was real. You know that one was memorable for sure. We had somebody, let me see if I can find this one because this was hilarious. Somebody says they were 48 from the 713. I was 48. Unfortunately, I had to fight my daughter's ex-boyfriend. Thank God I'm a larger person, ex-college football player. And he was a pot-headed twig.
All right, that's...
A 30-year-old pothead twig, he says.
That can go a couple different... Because in some ways, isn't that every guy's dream? Like, all right, if you're going to get in a fight... Now, I feel bad for whatever his daughter had to go through to the point, you know, that he got to the point where he was fighting.
Right.
Defending your daughter's honor is the one where I think, like, you're like, okay... If I'm gonna get in a fight, it's damn sure gonna be to protect somebody who's in danger or something like that. I hope it's worth it. You know, it's not gonna be an unjustified, ridiculous, my ego got involved type of fight.
Yeah, man. 48 though, still, it's like I would be that. That's another example of what I mentioned earlier, where if I got a fight at this age and 48, I'm obviously not 48 yet. But if I got a fight at this big age, let's just call it the age past where I feel like fighting anymore, I'm going to be so mad at you for pushing me to the brink, for pushing me to that level that I got to do this. You mean you couldn't treat my daughter nice enough for me not to have to want to fight you? Now I'm even more mad. I'm even more upset. Like, that's got to be it.
You got to feel weird. Did the 58-year-old guy respond with what exactly the circumstances were that he got in a 59-year-old fight?
It's crazy because we're getting so many in, and you know how our text line works.
Yeah, it's hard to go back and find them.
It is wild. And of course, you know, now that we're talking about fighting, you know, people are going to bring up Radio Row with you, Seth.
Everybody
wants to know how close you were. I wasn't there, but I maintain you weren't going to actually kill Josh.
God, no.
You weren't going to kill Josh. And Josh... Poor Josh was scared for his life.
I've told Josh this before. I actually went on his. I've talked to him a couple times since then. So for those of you who don't know, Josh Innes and I used to be on this station. We got into a big argument on Radio Row, which I only recently went back and watched for the first time. It still pops up on the internet here and there on my YouTube. And so it's funny. I kind of... You know, with reflection, how would I have handled this differently? Yeah, Josh was never in any danger of me swinging on him. Like I said, I can control myself pretty well, no matter how angry I get. And in that moment, I just wanted to slay with words more so than anything else like that. But to Josh's credit, he didn't know that I wouldn't have swung on him. So at some point in that whole exchange, I basically did challenge him to come speak to me man to man. And Josh said that he was over sitting at his table as he's hearing that. And, you know, Jilly, his girlfriend, is sitting across from him, working with him. And Josh did that thing where he's like, well, I got to do what I got to do, I guess. And he came over.
Oh, wait, and, I don't remember. So Jilly was there?
Jilly was there too.
Man.
It started off because they sent Jim over, and Jim, the producer, he had his phone on, and I know what they do. Like, he had his phone on, and I knew that was getting piped back to Josh's radio show, and they were going to come over and make fun of whatever we were talking about or whatever. So that's where I kind of flipped out on, because I knew what they were up to, and they had done the same thing the year before and kind of messed with Sean and Ted and Rich's show in the afternoon during Radio Row. And I'm like, it was like, all right, well, what are we going to do? I'm looking at our program director at the time, and he wasn't going to do anything about it. So I kind of just flipped out because I felt like somebody had to do something if the actual bosses and everything weren't. So I basically just flat out said, I told Josh that he should come say it to my face, and Josh, to his credit, did. And I think Josh didn't know that I wouldn't beat him up there. So
Very scary. Very scary. Brave and foolish on Josh's part. Good job on you for showing restraint. From the 281 here, I'm 46, and I think this is relatable for me, Seth, especially where I am in life with my kids and everything. The 281 says, I'm 46, and I want to fight these people that cut in the school drop-off line for the kids. They are teaching their kids that other people don't matter, and I want to teach my kids not to let people punk you. I understand this. The car line can be a tenuous space.
I know.
It can be a tenuous space.
It can be tenuous, but also, man, teaching your kids not to get punked is really dicey, too, because there is always that perspective. Sometimes it takes a lot of there's a time to stand up for yourself, but then there's also a time whatever, is this really the biggest deal? There's a fine line between turning the other cheek and also, you know, sometimes doing what's right either for you or others. That's tough. That's tough. I don't know, man.
I love that we spent almost 20 minutes talking about fighting and not that quarterback conversation that I wanted to have. But Seth Payne, Brandon Scott, M for Sean Pendergast, we will have that conversation next. Which of these two quarterbacks worries you more. That's next on Sports Radio 610.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln at Katy Freeway. 1 mile west of the Beltway, exit Kirkwood, under the giant American flag.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Brandon's got in for Sean Pendergast here with Seth Payne. We're having a pretty good time today. Talking about fighting. I mean, it's been a good show of us just talking about fight experiences. The last time we were in a fist fight, how old you were, what age is it, you know, no longer appropriate or excusable to be in a fight? Is it even age specific? Because we got a lot of people, and I got to be honest here, I'm surprised how advanced of the ages that we're getting here on the text line, 713-572-4610 is where you do that. But we're hearing from some, dare I say, seasoned people here telling us about their fight experiences.
Yeah, I'm always, it's always, well, you know, there's always interesting things like, you know, it was Marky Mark there, Mark Wahlberg. Mark Wahlberg loves to talk about like what a badass he was when he was a kid in Boston growing up and everything. But I remember telling him some story once where he talked about how he'd been in like hundreds of fights and he never lost. I'm like, well, okay, you're obviously lying. Like, it's not either that or you're picking on 10-year-olds, because if you fight that many times, you've gotten your butt whooped a few times. So the people that keep growing on into adulthood, like that's especially on into your 40s, I feel like you either haven't learned some lessons or you're just like freakishly out there on the bell curve where you can handle yourself really well and you don't mind every now and then having your ass beat. Like you very much understand. You don't make it into your 40s being a guy that gets in fights somewhat commonly without having your ass beat a few times. And that's a certain level of toughness that I'm just amazed that people are still alive by that point. Like, they actually live to that point without losing some of that zest for it. It's impressive. It's impressive.
So we've got someone here from the 713 says, almost beat up a bunch of loud teenagers at Deadpool 2. That's when I decided I needed course correction. The movie theater. That's another good one.
That's
so like
tough.
The mall and the movie theater. When you're out in public, anywhere where you're out in public and there's going to be a crew of teenagers around, that's a time to show restraint. Because obviously I'm not going to beat up a bunch of teenagers, but I am going to feel tempted to like chastise them. Hush up all of that noise, or where are your parents, and that type of thing.
Right.
And it never fails that one of them could very well sash you and make you want to yank them by the collar.
Well, but it's a group of them, too.
Yes.
You know, you're stepping into, those kids have no ethics. Like, it's not like, well, surely they'll let this be a one-on-one scenario.
It could go either way.
And let the better man prevail.
It could go either way.
You're gonna get some damn sneakers to your head, man.
Some sketches.
You're gonna be your tail. You're gonna be kicked unconscious with rubber soles, and that'll be it for you, okay? Yeah.
100%.
A van upside your temple.
So, yeah, those checkered vans. She got like a bunch of checkers.
I got beat by a group of skater kids. It was degrading.
Like, these kids were wearing New Balances, and I don't know what, Pumas, and I don't know what happened. Man, it's fighting at this age is not it. Two players.
One of our listeners, 57 years old. I take really good care of my body, former athlete. I think when I'm mad, I could do something. And in reality, that fast twitch has been gone for years, and things just rip when you try to explode. Odds are I would rip my shoulder, cry like a baby, sucking my thumb in the corner in a fetal position, hurting myself in a fight. That's probably about right.
Yeah.
That's why, you start tearing your Achilles tendons playing basketball when you're in like your late 30s. So imagine 20 years after that, trying to do something sudden and explosive. Even if you win the fight, it probably doesn't end well for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the difference, obviously, in a spontaneous, urgent fight. The difference between that and working out or playing basketball or any kind of sport, you're able to ration or to pace yourself, move or operate at your own pace without overdoing it. At least hopefully you are. Whereas in a fight, it's kind of a, not kind of, it's a survival of the fittest kind of thing. Like, you're out there trying not to get your ass kicked, trying not to die, whatever it is. You're going all out. And at these ages, we don't do that anymore. Even when we exert ourselves.
Yeah, you get that adrenaline rush
Yeah, even when we exert ourselves, we ration.
Your structural strength,
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a message for all you 57-year-olds out there. Just stop fighting, okay? It's not worth it. Quit fighting. Quit going out to the bars and getting in fights every weekend.
You know who isn't a fight? Nice little segue here. Who isn't a fight? To compete with CJ Stroud, that's Anthony Richardson and Caleb Williams. The first two quarterbacks that the Texans face this year, I feel like are in a fight to live up to the standard that CJ Stroud has set as both a rookie quarterback in Caleb Williams' case, and then an AFC South quarterback who is in the same draft class as Anthony Richardson. I feel like both of these guys are now in some ways having to either, however you want to look at it, look over their shoulder, rearview mirror, or just, look at somebody else's paper. The other paper is C.J. Stroud's and what C.J. Stroud was able to do last year with the Texans. First two opponents are guys that are trying to measure up to that standard.
Yeah.
And so I would ask this question, and I'm very interested to watch the Texans defense go up against both of these guys. I think they're going to have a hell of an opportunity in week one against Anthony Richardson because of what we talked about, his propensity to give the ball away or to make shoddy decisions or to just flat out be inaccurate with the football. And I think that Caleb Williams has got some hero ball in him, if you will.
Right.
So I think he's a more polished and more skilled talent, but I think there's opportunity for the Texans defense against both of them. But I'd ask this question, though.
Yeah.
Which of these two guys makes you more nervous? Which one of these guys scares you more, if at all, if either of them do
it? Yeah. Look, Caleb Williams by a long shot, I think. And they're both, look, Anthony Richardson can make your day miserable. I mean, he won the game for the Colts against the Texans last year in the first quarter. I mean, that was an insurmountable lead based on a couple of, he made some nice passes too. But he also just, he ran for two touchdowns virtually untouched. It's in a weird way, it almost makes me feel better about, it makes me feel better about it that he was untouched on those plays, because that was as much about the Texans' defense just not having their crap together. I mean, it could have been Baker Mayfield running untouched for 15 or 20 yards there. It was just they were not dialed in. So, that's a concern. But you're on a team where, you know, go back to the old, like Lamar Jackson is a younger player where they were incredible when they had a lead, but they couldn't play from behind before Lamar Jackson really developed as a passer, that they couldn't, they had to rely too much on Lamar Jackson's legs. So if you get in a shootout, the Ravens weren't as good with a younger Lamar Jackson. Now, I'm not comparing Anthony Richardson to Lamar Jackson because it would be an insult to Lamar Jackson, but you do have that same combo of like scary as hell on when they're running. And I think the Texans can withstand that a little bit. If Anthony Richardson ends up with 90 yards rushing in the game or what have you, C.J. Stroud's much more than capable of making up for however many points are scored off of that. With Caleb Williams, I think Caleb Williams might be more at risk for throwing turnovers than Anthony Richardson early in the season, because he's willing to take too many chances, and he's capable of doing it with his crazy arm talent. With the Colts, I think that Steichen's going to try to manage Richardson really carefully and keep him out of situations where he might turn the ball over. But with Caleb, he's just got such freakish arm talent. And the Texans have had issues with play action. The Texans last year, that was one of their big issues on defense. And I got to see that they've gotten over those issues before I can stamp them, you know, one of the better defenses in the NFL. So I think Caleb Williams has that ability to keep up with CJ Stroud if they're able to exploit the secondary a little bit, or if the pass rush isn't getting there.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. My answer would be Caleb Williams. But I'll say this much for both of them, though. I feel like what makes them scary is what's around them as much as their talent in and of itself. And I think Caleb is more talented. Obviously, Anthony Richardson is unique physically and physically gifted. That's why he's here. But when I look around, like what's around those two players, Caleb Williams and what the Bears have done and bringing in Keenan Allen, drafting Rome Odunze, oh, by the way, DJ Moore, somebody that they acquired last year. He was a part of their team last year. They just gave him $100 million. Like, those weapons, Cole Kmet as a tight end option, those options around Caleb Williams, I think, are going to be dangerous and going to have the Bears in a position to really compete in the NFC. And then likewise for Anthony Richardson, I like the Bears' weapons a little bit more, but given Anthony Richardson, A.D. Mitchell, and probably more than anything, I'd say, Seth, Shane Steichen, what's around them to me works for them and makes them just as scary or almost as scary as their actual physical traits.
I think the one thing about that is the one thing I saw from the Colts in the preseason, which is relevant obviously in week one. I think it'll be better as the season goes along. But one problem they have right now is that Anthony Richardson and his receivers are not on the same page. There have been multiple instances where some of the throws that look like errant throws were actually just Anthony Richardson throwing it to where he thought the receiver or the tight end was going to be.
That had to be the pick. Remember the pick six from either last week or the week before?
Yeah, it was. It was he thought the tight end was going to squat where he was, but instead he pivoted out. And, so they were on a different page. There's another one where I think it was A.D. Mitchell where, you know, A.D. Mitchell flattened his route out where maybe he should have extended it further upfield. And so it wouldn't, it looked more like it was on the wrong page than a wildly inaccurate throw. But that's, I mean, like, they don't have, that they haven't had much time to figure all that out. So I think that's going to be one more area that we're that, yeah, the Texans might be opportunistic just based on that kind of stuff.
Seth Payne, Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast on Payne and Pendergast. And coming up next, we've got a roster for the Houston Texans. Were they weak? I'll discuss that with Seth. That's on Sports Radio 610. Stay there.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Brandon Scott rolling along with Seth Payne here on Payne and Pendergast. Enjoyed the discussions about fighting. Enjoyed the discussions about the Texans. Enjoyed the discussions about the Astros, who, by the way, we should mention, the Astros start their series against the Kansas City Royals tonight. You've got Hunter Brown on the mound for the Astros. You got Brady Singer on the mound for the Kansas City Royals. But also worth pointing out, the Royals, like, this isn't just any old team coming into town, Seth. The Royals have a legitimate, they got a legitimate squad, but they also, more specifically, have a legitimate MVP candidate, a legitimate rising superstars. One thing I think about Kyle Tucker and his injury and how much I regret the fact that this happened to him, not just because the Astros have missed him. That's primarily the reason the Astros have missed him, even though they've survived, especially like that initial stretch without him, survived it just fine. But like Bobby Witt Jr. for the Kansas City Royals, I feel like Kyle Tucker was emerged. I know he's much older than Bobby Witt, but emerging as a superstar in the game for the way that he was playing early on in the season, the, like, bona fide MVP candidate level play from Kyle Tucker early on in the season, that's what you're getting from Bobby Witt Jr. and somebody that Astros fans are going to get an up close and personal look at tonight at the Juice Box.
Yeah, no, and look, do we see Jason Hayward? When's Jason Hayward's first appearance?
Jason Hayward is supposed to at least join the team. So it's a couple of real interesting news items. And by the way, our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. But yeah, Jason Hayward joining the team. Chaz McCormick hitting a home run and promptly being sent back to AAA to Sugar Land.
Yep. Like, Chaz has been just on. Chaz has been just absolutely atrocious over the last couple of weeks. He had going back to August 12th or so, he's had a 108 batting average. It's been as bad as it looks, okay? And it's unfortunate because everybody loves Chaz, and something had to be done. The problem is that you're at a point now where any of you're not allowed to trade for anybody. Jason Hayward of the 208 batting average, but a lefty. He's a lefty, so he's got that going for him, and can play outfield. I've seen hand wringing over the Jason Hayward signing, and that it might be a bad sign about Kyle Tucker. I don't know. If Chaz weren't as bad as he's been, maybe then I would read it that way. I'm just going to take the reports that Kyle Tucker is almost sprinting and take that as, okay, that's got to be good, right? We got to find out, is he sprinting off a mound? This feels like pitcher updates anymore.
The last
like
time.
These little tiny baby steps. Ooh, he's throwing. Ooh, he's throwing off a mound. Ooh, long toss. Good for you. That's what we are with Kyle Tucker.
Seth, I'm not going to lie to you.
You're running like a big boy now.
I'm not going to lie to you, man. The last video that I saw of Kyle Tucker, I think it was over the, well, it couldn't have been over the weekend because they were on the road. But either way, the last video that I saw of him, Adam Spillane took to whenever they were at home last.
Yeah.
Kyle Tucker was like, it looked like he was bunny hopping.
He
was bunny hopping or something. Like, he was not running.
Oh, like a little bunny hops, like not plyometrics, but just like tiny little bunny hops.
Yeah.
That is
not a great feeling. This is what we'll do here in this final segment of Payne and Pendergast before we hand it off to In the Loop. We'll just catch all this segment with, where are we weak? Where are we weak? So since the Astros are at this point, they've demoted Chaz McCormick, and they're bringing in Jason Hayward. Mm-hmm. The Texans obviously have finalized, for the most part, their roster. Let's do this with both teams as we end this here, Seth.
Okay.
Start with the Astros here.
Okay.
Where are we weak? What about the Astros has your confidence waning, would you say?
Let me give you a baseball lesson here, Brandon. You know, I sometimes I like to let the common folk in on a little baseball wisdom.
Please mansplain baseball to me.
At any given time on a baseball field, defensively, you have 9 players out there, 9 positions. 4 of those positions you feel awful about right now. Okay, that's
four?
Where we are.
4.
Other than when Jordan's playing left field.
Yes.
Yes.
Correct.
You feel awful about 4 of the 9 positions on the field, and also you don't feel so hot about third base because one of the best third basemen in the league is a bum elbow that basically turns into he might as well be 49-year-old me. They can only throw a ball hard every so often without it coming back to bite him. So, but at least 4 of those 9, damn near 50% of the positions on the field at any given time you don't feel so hot about. So that's all. The outfield and first base, that's all that really concerns me. Both of them have been, the outfield as a group for the last couple of months has been one of the worst ones in baseball. First base has been a rotating character of dudes who have never played first base before. But other than that, I feel pretty good about things.
It's crazy because
at any given time, it feels like it's some kind of fantasy league where these minor league kids get a chance to play with major league all-stars. You know, like, wow, look at this big thrill for the kid. Yeah, maybe it'll inspire him someday.
Yeah. What is like, what is this make-a-wish situation at first base and in the corner outfits, corner outfield spots?
You know
like,
what?
Why is this happening?
Victor Caratini came up to me and he told me, you know what, Skip? I just always dreamed of playing first base. I'm getting a start at first base. Could you do that for me? I just, you know, times the life is short, and I'd like to start at first base at least once in my life.
To me, Seth, it's one thing to have a turnstile at first base. It's another thing to be without one of your superstar players in Kyle Tucker. The fact that the Astros have been able to not just survive, but I would say excel with this being the state of affairs, because, I mean, remember, this is not just surviving. It's not like they've been in first place the whole time. They had to catch up. They looked at various points earlier on in the season dead in the water, and then you look up, and, oh, no Kyle Tucker, no problem. Oh, first baseman is a catastrophe, no problem. We're still going to figure it out. I don't know how they've managed to do this. I don't know how they've managed to withstand some of the glaring weaknesses and glaring as we do this segment. They're weak in multiple spots, as you point out, and they're still overcoming it.
Well, I was jokingly simplifying it earlier, although it is kind of glaring that like you're getting negative production out of 4 of your 9 positions. The pitching, you know, like it's as simple as that, man. When Hunter Brown and Spencer Arrighetti are able to transform into what they've become, and now with Verlander, we'll see Kikuchi, but widely panned by myself as well as others. Kikuchi has worked out marvelously, and the relief staff, just after all of that, just the atrocity of the first 3 weeks of the season, it's good, and it's that good that and because your all-stars, when they're good, are that good. I mean, the shot in the arm of Kyle Tucker coming back in September, somehow, some way, it might just be for a team that's been running with a parachute behind them the whole damn time. It feels like Kyle Tucker could cut the cords on that parachute and you could run full speed finally. Which is, by the way, the next step in his rehab is sprinting with a parachute behind him, ironically enough.
Sprinting at all would be nice.
Sprinting, yeah, and then you'll start doing the resistance sprinting.
Any kind of sprinting would be nice. Now, I don't think, like you mentioned earlier, some folks are concerned that the Jason Hayward signing is somehow an indication that something bad is going on with Kyle Tucker, or that they anticipate him being out even longer than he already has been. Look, for one thing, they've survived that. But you tell me if you agree with this. I don't view the Jason Hayward addition any differently or much differently than I view them bringing back Hector Neris. Like it's almost the exact same thing. Both guys 35, you know, roughly 35 years old.
Yeah.
You don't want to have to rely on them any more than what's reasonable, right? You feel like you've got guys that are already in the roles that they would otherwise fill if this was, say, years ago in Hayward's case, or even just last year in Hector Neris's case. I don't feel like they're going to be in a situation where they're super reliant on Jason Hayward at the end of the year.
Right, and it's also, if Chaz McCormick were just playing viable baseball at any time in the last couple of weeks, then I think it's not, they would have been, they would have stuck with that. And it's just, like, Kyle Tucker is just, it's just this big unknown that's looming out there, and the Astros have known that already. I don't think it was any point where they realized, like, oh wow, this really does seem like it's taking a long time for Kyle Tucker. They're just managing the roster the way they had been by just using Hayward instead of Meyer.
Yeah. So I'm confident in the Astros, though. I'm thankful that they play in this year's version of the AL West. And let's say maybe not last year's or even the year before, when the Mariners were pretty good, because I don't believe in the Mariners this year. I'm grateful that they are going to more than likely win this division almost by default. And I don't want to take credit away from the Astros and what they've been able to accomplish, but that's just not a very, very good division. The question with them is going to be more so how they stack up against the other not just how they stack up against, but whether or not they are themselves an American League power, like, say, the Yankees and the Orioles have shown themselves to be, and like the Cleveland Guardians have shown themselves to be. And honestly, I know that the Royals have sputtered at different points, but they've got an MVP candidate, and they're much better than they have been in previous years.
No, I think that we've been through this enough times in series where you win the World Series and series where you don't win the ALCS, whatever, that the bats are going to go dry at any given time anyway. No matter how good and no matter how historically potent you are, there's going to be dry spells. And so it always comes down to pitching to some degree. I think for the Astros to make a push this year, it would have to be with a freakishly good stretch of, like, world-class pitching for multiple series, and I think they're capable of doing that. It's just it's hard to imagine me some way where they're slugging their way through the playoffs when you've only got so many actual viable major leaguers on the roster right now.
Where are the Texans weak? Where would you say the Texans are weak? And we're going to bring in the guys from In the Loop in just a second. They can weigh in on this as well. But for you, Seth, to kick us off here, what the roster looks like, where would you say the Texans are weak, if at all?
I think for the most part, if I look at the entire roster, I worry about depth more so than anything, which is always a good sign. But part of that depth is that right now you don't have your ideal linebackers in the game. So right this moment, as long as Christian Harris is Kyle Tuckered his way into some unknown dark area of injury, that I'm nervous about the linebackers. I do remind myself that, look, the Texans beat the Colts last year and Jonathan Taylor ran for 188 yards, but all they had Christian Harris and a bunch of these same guys rotating in at the time. So the existence of Elshire, you know, if he hadn't been added in the offseason, then I'd be super nervous about linebacker. But I think Elshire being back there does make a big difference. And it's just, without Christian Harris there, it's hard to envision them being an elite defense. So that's why I need Christian Harris back as soon as possible.
John P. Lopez and Reginald Atatula of In the Loop fame, and also Figgy Fig, all joining us here still Pain and Pendergast, but about to be In the Loop, fellas. How y'all living?
Terrific, man.
Doing pretty good myself as well. I got the Houston, the Cougar box in, man. I'm excited.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you got your nice little
little swag box.
Swag box.
That's right. There we go. Yeah, man. I'm excited. Excited for the season. And we'll see how long that excitement holds.
When was the last time y'all scrapped? How old were you? How old were you the last time you scrapped?
Like a real one?
Yeah. You ain't got to tell us, you know, how it ended, if it didn't end well. I'm just curious. At what age, Reginald? I know you're 32.
That's correct.
What age were you guys at the last time?
I appreciate you keeping tabs on me.
You actually scrapped.
Man, the last one that I actually really remember, and I will be honest, there are things that I allow to be memory hold within myself, so there might be one that I just forgot of, but last time I really remember, it was probably like middle school, being completely honest.
College.
College?
Oh, yeah.
Same that sounds
me.
About
yeah.
right.
Yeah, college.
College. So Aggie on Aggie crime?
Or no, what? It was an honorable fight. It was
you were you on the right side of history?
I was on the right side okay. of history.
Just check.
Just for the record. No, but my best friend, actually, I was in Austin. My best friend went to UT and I went to A&M, so we'd go back and forth. And we were at a bar called Speedy's on 6th Street. And it was a piano bar. And he was singing, and some guy got into it with him, and he went to the bathroom like 10 minutes later, and I saw the dude walk in there, and I said, I bet you he's up to no good. And he jumped my friend. So, I was young and stronger, and we walked out of there with our heads held high, I'll just say that.
Huh. How about that?
And who remembers Speedy's on 6th Street? That was a great bar.
No,
sounds like the same. A lot of bars were named stuff like Porky's and Speedy. Yeah. Back in the day. It was a popular name. Yeah.
Underrated bar on 6th Street that I used to go to back in the day was called the Library.
I remember the
there's
library.
There's a library on every library. Like, anywhere yeah. that there's a college, there's a library.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know exactly why that. Well, maybe it's because, you know, when that credit card receipt come through, it just says that you were at the library. Maybe that's what it is.
The cave? You remember the cave?
And it might have just been that particular weekend that I'm thinking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That particular weekend where things worked out perfectly in my favor.
Yeah.
Was it anywhere near Texas Relays?
No.
No, okay.
No, it wasn't.
That's a great weekend in Austin.
That's a good point. Good point. It was Brandon, basketball season, but that's a good point.
I think you had said it earlier. What was your age that you realized your last fight was?
19, and that okay. was more of a parking lot brawl. It wasn't even a one-on-one. I just participated in some shenanigans. My last one-on-one, honestly, probably was, like Reginald said, 8th grade, and I got to actually tell this story.
Okay, I won it.
Well, because if you look at the beginning of the fight, you might think I won it, but everybody that was at Stafford Middle School that day will tell you,
that
I actually lost that fight and watched the entirety of it. I started off really good because I got the first couple of licks in, but this dude was actually much bigger than me. And once we got to the ground,
it was over.
Man, I was getting the business, man. I was like, man, somebody get this joker off of me, man.
Weight classes exist for a reason.
But I got those first two licks and it was glamorous.
Hey.
I
mean, That's right.
It made it look good.
That's when you need to have that fight near an authority. Authority.
Yeah, so
it gets
break
it
up.
Broken up soon. You know
hold
what I mean?
Me back. Hold me back. Yeah.
100%.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to LinkedIn.com/results to claim your credit. That's LinkedIn.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly
Auto Parts.